Odd, Rockpoint put in from his own flagship, still 200 miles from HMS Armagh. If you and Gwilym had discussed your tactical notions with me before Crag Reach, that's exactly what I would have said then. Oh, except that I probably would have added that you were planning on sailing in through a narrow channel you couldn't even see in the middle of a full gale. Obviously, a far better and more maturely considered battle plan all around, Your Majesty. The situation was entirely different, and you know it, Caleb riposted. Thirsk's fleet's morale was already broken, and I had a huge firepower advantage. Not only that, he was anchored. I had every maneuver advantage there was, and his people were more than half defeated before we ever fired the first shot. You may have noticed there's just a bit of difference between the Dolaran's condition then and what Harper and Tybald have accomplished with their ships.
That's true, Lock Island acknowledged. By the same token, though, Thirsk wasn't handicapped by having 50 unarmed Harchongi's galleons hanging on his coattails. Not only that, Harper's formation spread out between 6 columns, 7 counting the squadron he's got covering that gaggle of sunrisings. And I don't care how well he's managed to drill his crews, none of them will expect a night action. You know how confusing and terrifying that can be, Caleb. You counted on it at Crag Reach. And however much training they've done, our people are a lot more experienced, so any confusion's going to work a lot more in our favor than theirs.
The only way you're going to stand a chance against that many enemy ships is to maintain tight tactical control, Caleb argued, his voice flat. And every one of your signal systems depend on people being able to see them. If you lose cohesion, if your formation comes apart in the middle of all those church galleons, you lose, Brian. I don't care how good our people are. I'll even concede that you'll give better than you get, but in the end, you'll lose.
If he manages to maintain his tactical control, we lose anyway, because we won't be able to get deep enough to break him up. Lock Island replied. We can nibble around the edges, but we can't stop him without ripping the brain and the heart out of his fleet, and you know it. For that, we have to penetrate his formation.
And there's another point, Caleb, Rock Island said. Edward only had time to manufacture a couple thousand shells, and the gun crews haven't had the time or the spare ammunition to train with them.
The Baron shrugged where he sat in his day cabin's comfortable armchair.
We've dry-fired and rehearsed, but they've never actually used them, and despite the Navy's confidence in Alfred, they're going to be a little tentative at first. We're going to have to get in really close to make them count, and I've only got about 170 in each ship. That's less than 8 broadsides for each of them. So if we can't make each of those broadsides count, we lose. And if we have to spar around the fringes, fight our way through just to get to decisive range in the first place, we may lose one or more of the shell-armed ships on our way in. Worse, we may have to use shell fire to get inside in the first place, in which case the people we're really after may have time to figure out what's coming before we hit them with it.
But, Caleb began.
They're right, Caleb, a deep voice said quietly. The Emperor's head turned, eyes sweeping towards the door beyond which Merlin Athrawis stood guard over Prince Tymon's suite.
They're right, the Sajan repeated, sub-vocalizing over his own built-in calm. They can't win this one by just killing ships. They can't kill enough of them. They have to defeat the fleet's cohesion, and to do that, they have to get in close. Worse, Harper's signal system may not be as good or as flexible as ours, but it's good enough for him to mass his squadrons if he's able to see Brian and Dominic coming. For that matter, there's going to be enough gun smoke once close action is joined, it would be almost impossible for Brian to pass signals reliably anyway. The fact that he and Dominic, at least, will be able to see exactly what's going on will offer a significant advantage over Harper, but they won't be able to give detailed orders to anyone else whatever happens. Better for them to go in the dark when the other side can't exercise any sort of tight control, and the confusion lets us maximize our ship's individual superiority.
Caleb sat silent for several endless seconds, and his wife's hand reached out across the bassinet between them. She laid it on his knee, and he looked at her quickly.
"Let them do it their way," she said very softly. "They're the best you've got. They're the ones actually on the spot, and they deserve for you to have enough confidence in them to let them fight their battle the way they think best. I know it's not easy for you, and I know why, but let them do it their way."
Caleb inhaled deeply, and then, slowly, he nodded. "All right, Brian, Dominic, we'll do it your way," the Emperor of Karis said quietly. 3. Off the Windmore Coast, Gulf of Taro. Arnald Tybald grimaced as a fresh wall of tropical rain swept across NGS Sword of God's poop deck. Rain in the Gulf of Taro wasn't like rain in more northern waters. It didn't start gradually. There was no gentle warning. A handful of enormous raindrops smacked into his already streaming oilskins, like cavalry hooves clattering down a stone street. Then, almost before his mind had time to register their impact, a solid wave of water pounded down. Visibility dropped instantly to almost nothing. Of course, visibility had already been limited at the moment, given the overcast night's total lack of moon or stars, but he could barely see the glow of the binnacle through the deluge, and when he looked up, he saw what looked like ground mist where splintered raindrops bounced back up off the deck planking.
"Me and my wise-ass comments about bad weather," he reflected.
Still, compared to the passage of storms, this wasn't bad weather. Not really. The wind had risen, enough for the fleet to furl its topgallants, but it came steadily out of the east, without rage or violence. It had veered almost 2 full points to broad on Sword of God's beam on her present heading, but the sea's motion hadn't caught up with the wind shift. The waves continued to come in under her quarter, imparting an uncomfortable corkscrew motion. There was no indication of squalls, no thunder, no lightning flashing on the horizon, however.
"Not even Sun Rising's fumble fists are going to have any trouble out of this kind of storm," he thought, then reached out and rapped his knuckles on the wooden fife rail. "Let's not tempt fate, Arnald," he reminded himself sardonically.